Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Orange and Blueprint Podcast. I thank you for joining me once again. This is Anthony, I'm your host, and I wanted to ask you this. Have you ever thought of the Knicks as a disappointing hamburger? Because that's what I'm thinking that I'm going to go with the Knicks are. This season has been an uninspired, kind of attractive from a distance. When it gets to your plate, you realize that the burger's not seasoned right, and it's a little disappointing. It's not terrible. It could be worse in theory, but it won't make you sick. But it's definitely not leaving you satisfied. It just kind of is gonna pass on through. But the Knicks are surrounded by the Knicks burger anyway, turd burger, if you will, are surrounded by two very delicious pieces of bread, artisan bread, if you will, and they really are the the past for the Knicks and the future. It's just the horribly not even mediocre, weirdly cooked, not all the way, it's cold in spots, just meat inside the present. That's that. The future is looking kind of good, nice little cheese on the side that's kind of sitting there, stuck to the wrapper a little bit, in that kind of really good diner-type burger kind of way. But it's just where we are now that kind of stinks. So I want to kind of look at everything, the state of the Knicks, in that mindset. Let's start with the past. You know, the top of the bun, so to speak, with all the deliciousness on there. It's a good burger if you can wipe it on something and it gets clear. That's the burger I want to eat. And shout out to anyone who gets that reference. But let's look at the past. I mean, there was something that I just got to start off with. Congratulations to one of the patron saints of the New York Knicks franchise, Patrick Ewing, for getting the head coaching job at Georgetown. I will be the first to say I am not a very big college basketball fan. Some would say, rightfully so, that I'm a college basketball hater. And I can say that, you know what? I will be very interested in to see how the next 4 years or so of Georgetown basketball goes with one of their greats. I mean, I looked it up, and again, I'm not a college basketball fan. I'm hardly a historian of the game, mostly. But I looked it up, and I knew Patrick Ewing was good at Georgetown. But, I mean, this guy, I think it was 3 years. He went there for 4 years. I looked it up earlier. 4 years, three national championships, national championship games. But then winning one. He was there, the player of the year, 1 year it was. NCAA champion, three-time All-American. I mean, those are the things he did as essentially a child. He comes to the league and 11-time All-Star, 7-time All-NBA. The year I was born, that 85-86 season, he was the Rookie of the Year. He was also the Player of the Year in college the season prior. Three-time all defensive team in the NBA. Hall of Famer from 85 to 2000. This guy held it down in New York, so I can't tell you how happy I am to see him finally break the barrier to getting a head coaching job. It's not right. It's not fair. But life is neither of those things that he didn't get his opportunity to coach in the NBA. But I think that day is coming. Honestly, I hope it's for the New York Knicks one day. But that's here nor there, essentially. Karmically, I think it would be good for the Knicks to do right and get him in the building for an interview at least. But the Knicks in doing right or the Knicks in being mature, those things are not on the menu, if you will. So, I mean, just one thing from the past that's kind of good. Patrick Ewing finally getting the opportunity to lead a team in that coaching job that he's been searching for. So I'm happy for him. I'll be looking at Georgetown, trying to see what they do. If I can get my hands on some Georgetown, merch, I'm going to do that just to support the big guy. So I want to kind of touch on that first and foremost, but also, again, looking at the past and how it's been kind of relevant in the Knicks currently, you know, this is the 70th anniversary. They've been bringing back the old timers. They had what I would call like a celebration of the golden age Knicks, you know, Clyde, you know, Earl Monroe, those guys. They, well, before I move on, I got to say something, and I'm not going to let it slide ever. Clyde Frazier had probably the greatest game seven in the NBA Finals of all time. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. He had 36, 19, and 7 against the Lakers, and that's without one of their best players, Willis Reed, that you've probably seen the clips. He walks out. The crowd goes crazy. Oh, the MVP. The MVP is back. Yeah. Willis Reed was hobbled and scored 4 points that game. And I'm going to remember to put a link to the video in the show notes here. But Willis Reed had 4 points. Clyde carried the team both sides and left it all out there. Got a nice win in New York. I think that was the 70. I think that was in 71, I believe. But one of the greatest game sevens of all time, Clyde Frazier. So again, shout out to him. Also, I mentioned Earl Monroe. He was not on that particular team. I believe he was on 73. I started reading his autobiography. It is not good. I'm not a quitter, but I definitely quit on that. Yeah, luckily, you know, shout out to secondhand books because I paid a nice $7 for it, and I think I got $3 of reading out of it. But it is what it is. Maybe one day I'll come back to it. But just celebrating those guys from that era, the golden age of the Knicks. I mean, that was just great to see of all the players that are still, you know, with us. It's just great to have them have their moment in the sun. Former Senator Bill Bradley was there. It was pretty dope. And, you know, you want to see that kind of stuff. If you can't have good times now, at least hold on to the positives from the past. So I kind of enjoy that. Shout out to those guys. I talked about Patrick Ewing. He always gets the standing ovation anytime the Hornets come to town, and he got that. I consider that maybe like silver age of Knicks basketball. You know, Coach Pat Riley before he went turncoat. Those Xavier McDaniels, John Starks, Anthony Mason, you know, rest in peace, all those guys. And I kind of wish, you know, that looking at that kind of time, I wish that Mark Jackson would have had a longer tenure here. I mean, I know that he was the rookie of the year and he played well in his time, but, you know, hindsight's 2020 with all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we get to through the entire era of Knicks and it's marred just because of everything that happened with Charles Oakley, and there's a rumor out there that Charlie Ward was not invited to come back when they get into that 2000s era Knicks with, you know, Sprewell and Larry Johnson, Allen Houston, John Starks, I mentioned him, but in those last year, actually, current Knicks employees or somewhere within the family, essentially. And Charlie Ward, because apparently he may have a closer relationship with Oak. He was not allowed to come back to MSG to have that moment that he earned. I mean, Charlie Ward gave Kobe Bryant a two-piece, and that will live forever. Not to mention just his general play on the court, you know, but how are you not going to have a guy of that stature to join everyone in that moment? I mean, they had just everybody there. I saw pictures of Camby at the practice facility with the current guys. And if there's a guy who should be able to give some tips to a lot of the younger players, especially Porzingis and Hernan Gomez, excuse me, it would definitely be a guy like Marcus Camby. And again, it's just the Knicks in their present day, in their current iteration, doing right and being mature. It's just not on the menu. So with that, let's go ahead and skip over because we're getting eerily close to the present and the present sucks. So let's skip over that and go to the future because that's the thing where we're currently sitting at basically the end of the season. There's only a couple of games left. The Knicks just won versus the Bulls last night, a fringe playoff team. It's weird. It's, you know what? I'm not going to talk about these guys now. I'm going to do it in a moment. But let's move to the future. Looking at the site that's getting some of the most spins, quote unquote, on my browser is tankathon.com. And it's just, if you're unfamiliar, if you're unfamiliar, that means you must be blessed with a good team, because all over NBA Twitter, I'm seeing this a lot from woebegone franchises. And this website essentially simulates the NBA draft, the lottery anyway. The Knicks right now are slotted for the sixth worst record in the league. They're at 30-48. They need to get some more losses to catch up with Philly and to stay ahead of Sacramento, Minnesota. But I'm kind of at peace with where the Knicks are. I never thought they'd be a top four drafting team. Honestly, you know, if you look back in previous episodes, I was cautiously optimistic with this season. It's been not good, but right now they're slotted at six. To me, that's perfect, because I want the Knicks to draft De'Aaron Fox with, I've put it out there on Twitter a lot of times. If you want to interact with me on Twitter, feel free. It's AK Houston, AKHUESTON on Twitter. And I've made it well known, De'Aaron Fox is my guy. And I'm hoping that the Knicks can stay in that range, because he's the kind of player I believe can fix what ails the Knicks. If he's allowed to both play for the Knicks and be put in a system where he can succeed. And I think that what he brings to the table defensively, most importantly, will be in high need in Gotham City, because Derrick Rose is it's almost as if he is a traffic cone with holes in it, like a traffic cone with holes cut out for like wind to cut down wind resistance. He's not blocking the wind either. He's so bad on defense, it's ridiculous. And I think we need to get a person who can play at that point guard position and make the opposing guards work. I don't know how many guards there are out in the league, generally speaking, that especially amongst the like elite level, that are good defenders. And yeah, and this is not something I normally do, but if you can tell me who are the good defenders at the position, let me know, because I don't know who they are. You know, I talked with Justin and Kenny, the rest of the team here at HHSR, and it's like, you know, a lot of NBA point guards can score in a lot of great different ways. You know, Steph's handle is great. Kyrie's handle is great. Both of them can kind of score from anywhere. Steph's got a little more range, obviously. Damian Lillard is a dynamo all the time. I mean, Russell Westbrook. It's just so many guards out there, and they can all score. The game is built for them to score now. And I don't know who are the people that are slowing them down. On a regular basis, who are those people? For good defending point guards, all I can think of is like Patrick Beverley, and that's it. And he's not a guy who you can just dump on any team. If he wasn't playing with James Harden, I'm not sure if that would be a viable playing situation for a team to try and win games. So it's like, who are the guys out there that are good defenders? And where would a player with the skills of De'Aaron Fox come in and be able to kind of move towards that list? What's the current, and I know his reputation, but what is the current kind of defensive effect of Mike Conley? He's always had that reputation, but is it real? Is it current? I don't know. It's one of those things in the NBA. You can get a reputation for something, and it'll carry you for 5 or 6 years before the league catches up to find out that, oh, no, that guy, he just sucks. Rudy Gay, for example, it kind of fills that mold. But so it's interesting, because I think that if De'Aaron Fox can be selected by the Knicks, I think he can do what we need to do as far as playing defense. He can't shoot as well as one might like, and that's a problem. But offense has not really been the problem in New York for a while. As a matter of fact, I was looking at some stuff, and especially with all the conversation or controversy around the triangle offense. The offense really, like I looked it up, they're 18th in offensive efficiency, as well as points per game. There are 30 teams in the NBA, so they're a little bit below average. And that's not bad. It's not good. Don't get it twisted. It's not good. That's part of that whole, like, mediocre, not very well done burger. You know, right now they're just kind of a little bit below average, you know, with offensively. Defensively, they are hot garbage. Again, there are 30 teams in the NBA. They are 25th in defensive efficiency. Opponents, they got a scoring margin where they're basically negative 3.6, and opponents are shooting over 50% versus the Knicks from the floor. And if it's a make or miss league, and you know that against one team you're gonna make more than you miss, just mathematically, that's a big hole to try and get out of every game. And not to mention, it's a game of runs, and it's, you can't win if you can't play defense. And the Knicks have proven that over and over again. As a matter of fact, the Knicks, not a fun fact, and I guess we'll just go ahead and get into a little bit of that, more of that that lame ass burger that is the current Knicks. The Knicks haven't won two games in a row since December 31st. Right now, as of this recording, it is April 5th. Happy birthday, Ashley. It's April 5th. And so, I mean, you haven't tripped into two wins in a row in that period. That means you're just broken. And I don't understand. And I saw a stat from Chris Herring also to kind of elaborate on this point. The Knicks haven't been good on defense in almost 15 years. And so that basically since Patrick Ewing has left the building, was unceremoniously kicked out of the building, the Knicks haven't been, they've been bottom 10, 11 of the last 15 years. That says it all. That really says it all. You can't win if you don't play defense, and you can't win consistently year to year if you're not a team that's building both offensively and defensively. The Knicks had one great year, they won like 50 some games. They won because they played a game that played to their strengths as a team. They could shoot the three. They didn't turn over the ball. They played an exceptionally slow game, and they created turnovers. That kind of stuff maybe was deemed and seemed to be true as unsustainable, but it was a way that they could play and they should play, as opposed to what they went to and what they've gone to, as far as a whole team defensively. And it's interesting because the triangle that's been down pressed from Phil Jackson, it's supposedly one of the emphasis is a word? I don't know. Well, I'm using it and you probably understand it. So that may gotta count for something, right? It's supposed to help balance the floor for getting back on defense. But if you don't have, you know, players who can play defense, then it doesn't matter. And I was listening to the Ringer's NBA podcast, which I really, really like that show. They said, I can't remember the guest's name, but he said X's and O's aren't as good as Jimmy's and Joe's. I think that it's more of a Jimmy's and Joe's problem than it is a whatever offensive shape you want to play. You know, it's a thing where, because this has been an issue for so long, it can't be something that's scheme dependent. It's not necessarily a coaching dependent thing. It's just, I don't know, James Dolan probably. I mean, should I start calling him James Olin? Because there's no D in his franchise at all. It's interesting. They've got to turn it around. They've got to figure it out. And the league is set up to be a score every night, both teams over 100 points. That's just how the league is. It's fun. I'm not even mad about it. But you got to be better. You've got to try. And it's got to be a thing where if you are working to try and get some sustained success, because there's no shortcuts in the NBA. There are none. You know, that you've got to be able to build some defensive players, not build them, but build a defensive roster that can play the way the league is playing. And I don't, until they figure it out, and you've got to start with your point guard getting some pressure on the ball from, I mean, not necessarily 94 feet, but I mean, you've got to be able to pressure the ball and do something that forces teams into situations they're not comfortable with. And the Knicks don't do that at all. You know, and that's kind of why they suck the way they do now. But, you know, it's kind of, I'm of two minds of it. And if you haven't gathered, let's go ahead and move into some other kind of what I'm hoping for the rest of the season, because I kind of couldn't resist biting into that mediocrity sandwich. But I'm hoping that the Knicks, again, draft De'Aaron Fox. If they don't get him, get someone who can, you know, we need some more two-way players who are young and under cheap contract. The Knicks should not bring back Derrick Rose. They are going to. They should not. I can't stress that enough. I saw a tweet from their PR account today that his doctor in Chicago is working with their doctor, and he should be out or should be back to basketball activities in 3 to 6 weeks. He just had an injury. He's out for the season. That says more about the length of the season than the injury, I imagine. But it's just, he's so bad at defense. He's so bad, and he just is incredibly frustrating to watch. He doesn't space the floor. He doesn't get to the free throw line. He doesn't play defense. He passes up opportunities to set up his teammates that aren't Carmelo Anthony, namely Porzingis. It's just it's weird and frustrating to watch, and in other players play better than him that are on the roster. They should re-sign, or they should retain Ron Baker, Chason Randle, both of those guards. I would prefer them. They're not starters, but I don't think Derrick Rose is a starter. What he could do, if we had someone, and maybe, you know, in a perfect world, maybe it'll work out like this. They draft De'Aaron Fox, they retain Derrick Rose because that's what they're going to do. Lord help me if they, like, max him out. Maybe Derrick Rose is a caretaker for De'Aaron Fox. Hopefully by Martin Luther King Day, De'Aaron Fox is the starter. I don't know how that'll work. Or whatever guard. If they get any of these guards, hopefully they're their starter by Martin Luther King Day. Because if you listen to my last pod, that's when I know they're for real. So, or that's when I know they are whatever they are. Not for real. But they should get rid of Rose, or get it if they bring him back. It better be a cheap deal with a short contract date. Length, I should say. They should bring back, do whatever they can to try and bring back Justin Holiday. He's a better player than Rose, especially in his bench role. I don't think he should be extended to being a starter, but they should bring him back. But the real deal is, oh, and please get rid of Sasha Vucevic. What is he doing on this roster? He's not supposed to be in the NBA. I don't understand. I don't understand that. Him coming back versus Derrick Rose coming back, as which of those two options is more confounding for me, I might have to just, like, shoot myself in the head. I don't really know. But you can't really do anything without figuring out what's going on with the latest controversial superstar in the franchise, and that's Carmelo Anthony. It's looking like almost as if the history is repeating itself with Patrick Ewing. It's not to say that Melo is as good as Ewing. He's not. Or if he means as much to the franchise, he doesn't. But Carmelo's being run out of town, and I think it's kind of sad. You might call me a Melo apologist. I know he's not great at defense. I think he's, when he's interested, or if the team is showing some stability, or he's getting the kind of help that he needs, and he needs a specific kind of help, especially from that point guard position, to be as successful as he can be. I think he's still a high-level player, but I just don't think that he's got the kind of team around him that's going to push him and also let him work in areas that he's going to be best in. So, I mean, that kind of is what it is with him. But you've got the Knicks are supposedly going to have a very important exit meeting with Carmelo. Hopefully it's Phil Jackson, Steve Mills, Carmelo Anthony, Jeff Hornacek, whoever's going to be in there. They need to, as Carmelo has said himself, put all the chips on the table, because the writing's on the wall, and whatever other weird, semi-cryptic, non-deep thing that Carmelo's going to say. They need to kind of clear the air and let them, they need to let each other know. And I really believe it's Phil as the manager person who needs to make it clear. It's just weird and dumb. And I, like I said before, Phil needs to shut up, and he's done that for the most part. But it's weird that there's so much confusion between these two people when we exist in a world where 24-hour communication is possible and easy. I don't understand. And it's, if I were a person in the NBA, like another player, just looking from afar at the NBA or at the Knicks in the free agency landscape, I would avoid that. I would just, if my agent brought that to me, I'd be like, no, unless they're going to bring a dump truck full of money to my house, move along. Nothing to see here. I would pull an old Grant Hill and say, oh, the Knicks have interest in me. Hey, Milwaukee, you might want to jump up another cup of million. But it just kind of is what it is with that. They need to figure it out. Because if Carmelo wants to be here, he'll be here. And Phil needs to just suck it up. If Carmelo doesn't want to be here, he needs to accept that there may not be a Carmelo Anthony size hole in those three or four destinations that can be filled with him, that also, based on salary cap rules and everything, can be a viable trade for the Knicks. And if I'm Phil Jackson, I say, do you want to be here? Yay or nay? If no, let me know. I'll see what I can do. Where do you want to go? And then let him know, hey, look, you're going to go to this team, and because of your salary cap number, if they want you, which is an unknowable thing at this point, if they want you, they'll have to give up so much to get you that where you're going won't be better than where you're leaving. And you're going to uproot your family and all that kind of stuff. We know he only wants to go to, supposedly, L.A., Cleveland, and Boston. Maybe Chicago was on that list. I don't really remember. But, excuse me. There's no real good place out there for him, but I think that if he were to continue to stay with the New York Knicks, which is what I honestly would prefer as a fan, but if he was to stay, there's a clear path for him to stick around as the team, in theory, improves. He gets all his money still, but he becomes a more secondary player to Porzingis, or not necessarily to Hernan Gomez, but plays a lesser role as he gets older and becomes more of that tertiary scorer or things like that. I don't imagine a world where he is coming off the bench in 2 years, but I mean, that's possible. Cause I mean, but when you look at it, he's owed $26 million next year, $28 million the year after that. That's a big number to bring onto a team that if he's leaving, he's going to want to try and win a title. And the way the league is, there's no shortcuts. The teams that are going to be in contention now in 2 years are going to be some of the teams we see coming, and then the teams that are here. Like, I don't think the Cavaliers are really breaking up, and I don't foresee them wanting to give up Love for Melo, not to mention, I don't know how that would work with the Knicks. I don't know how Love would fit on the Knicks or how even Melo would fit in Boston. There's some talk like maybe he would fit well in LA, but where does that put the Clippers? They're not going to be winning a title with Carmelo Anthony as one of their third options. I mean, even if that Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, point guard, small forward, power forward relationship would be better for them, I think. I just don't think it puts them over the top. So they just need to put it all on the table and see what it is, because I really think that he just needs to stay. And that's kind of where it is. You're looking at a core potentially of, let's hope, you know, fingers crossed for me, Fox, KP, Willie Hernan Gomez, Carmelo Anthony, some more draft picks coming up. We've got all our draft picks going forward, and hopefully not Derrick Rose. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but I'm going to wrap it up here. But don't forget, if you can tell me who you think is a good defensive point guard, and I do mean point guard. I'm not saying someone like Kawhi Leonard, who guards everyone on the perimeter and things like that. Who are the really good defensive point guards that are, you know, having a noteworthy impact on somebody's offense that night or making somebody work. Like Steph Curry's not a good defender. Who is a good defender? I don't know. I don't know. All I can think of is Mike Conley and Patrick Beverley. But let me know. Let me know. Peace.